Okay, now we're going on to our second segment, and first question that I thought I would address is the question about the negative nature of gold here. Does that mean that the long-term trend is not present? And the answer is no. It's just that the problem is gold is in a bull market, and it's just not that bull markets have interruptions to them, and so it looks like we're seeing a weakness, which is saying that we're beginning to top out, but it won't be completely topped out until we get to June, and thereafter, I think you'll see a big correction. So it's this caution signs going up on that and problems. But just to summarize the forecast, in T-theory, that you very much you just have at its simplest state that you can make a bull mar an uptrend is only for the amount of time that you had a bear market. So for on the long term sense for gold went down for 20 years from 1980 to 2001. So you expect it to go up for 20 years to 2020 for the next peak. Okay. Now, so the bull market is 20 years, and however, since T-theory is fractal in nature, meaning that you're in a bull market, you still have to make T's, it means that the market is only going to be rising 10 years in the 20-year period, and the other 10 years is basically consolidation or correction. So there's a you're only going to get a quarter of the what you were hoping for, in the fact that you can only get 10 years of strength out of the 20-year time period, and mischievous sort of things can happen to gold during the corrections, because typically it's very volatile because gold does not carry a dividend with it, and generally people won't hold on to in this time period. They don't like to hold on to things that don't have some interest accrued to them, which is one of the reasons the high yield bonds are so popular, is that they don't mind the fluctuations because they're in it for the yield. So you got the problem of what you're going to do about the gold. My the concern that I had was that the gold money flow tees show that you had, you saw the first half coming up in Parker's analysis, which was done earlier, and you should have carried out your run up, and that should be around to mid-February, but it just kind of died. It's trying to find a bottom, and people are saying it looks like it's bottoming here, but I think that's just that it's just getting ready to try and come back, and it's going to top out in mid-February. And then there's the question of what's going to happen after mid-February. You could go into just retest previous lows, and then come up into the Tocqueville Gold T in the June time period, or is this going to plunge off into a deep oversold condition? You don't know. See, but I'd just be cautious on that one, because it didn't carry out its money flow T. That's a sign of weakness. Okay. The other thing you got going, another region of concern here is that we did it for copper, and it's got a top, and that general area in the middle of the month. And then you've got the question is if the copper and gold have got them, oil probably has, and there's speculation going on in some of these commodities. So by some people believe speculation is going on in the commodities, and it's a pretty good bet that what happened was that when the quantitative easing, they punched a whole bunch of money into the Wall Street, and Wall Street went on a speculative commodity bubble, and they are likely to be seeing that punctured all the way down. So it would be grains, oil, copper, and gold and silver, and anything else that's has been had a big run up. So there's a danger that you are going to get into a situation where it's going to get ugly, and then that's going to prevent you from being interested in gold in the future. But after it has gone through a suitable long-term correction, it's perfectly normal to go back up again. So it's just a timing issue, and the concern is really is that you look like that you the speculation in the commodity area is got a subcluster that's going into the middle of the month, and so it's not a gentle downtrend, uptrend because they still have considerable profits, even though the gold is, it's down. But I mean, oil has been pushing around low of $90, and copper at $4.50 is considered to be extremely high. And anytime you get that sort of stuff, that all the traders are loaded up on the stuff, and then they're going to get disappointed. They're going to try and unload it. So that's probably where the maximum damage is going to be. So I just let that leave that alone and say that there isn't anything wrong with the gold as a long term. And if it doesn't bother you, don't let my analysis bother you. But I'm just saying the odds favor that they are you're not going to see a good buy point until you get to 2012, because we had this top in September of the this year, and it did good. Gold has gone up for 2 years, see, so you probably are going down for more than 6 months, so that the bottom is in the it's probably in the 12 year. And since there is likely to be a late 2012 low, gold sometimes follows the market. That's probably where it is. And the question you ought to ask is, you want to be disappointed for that length of time? You could also hold this through here and then come up and take the Tocqueville Gold T with its projection at the it's basically that's the May top for we have for the stock markets. They will all converge there. And if you want, and then you can take another look at it. Okay, so that's about the that's all I wanted to talk about on that regard. Now, in the new chart which I have down here, which covers the S&P 500, Vanguard, U.S. long-term bonds, and Fidelity Capital Income, I got it color-coded and everything. But the important thing is, I went over to the back and I got the formulas for calculating the compound growth rates of the bottom zones. And there's some interesting things in here, which you can also want to keep in mind, even if you're not using best bond. The first one is the S&P 500 plus the dividends, which means it's a total return. When you compound the growth from 2000 to 2010, which is 11 years inclusive, you have a gain of 0.4% per annum. Okay, so that's really the 40-year cycle. You're caught in the wrong area on that one. And if you did this for gold, you'd find out that it was up around, it's 20% anyway. It'd be 25%, and then it depends on whether you're doing mining stocks or you're doing the bullion. And so what you had is the shift over from the S&P 500 to the hard assets. And it is a long-term phenomenon. It just has its problems of coping with the corrections. The interesting thing that I thought, which I brought to bring to your attention, is that the long-term government bonds at a compound growth rate of 7.5% is very nearly equal to the Fidelity Capital and Income High Yield Bond Fund of 7.8%. And it's remarkable because right now, everybody's very interested in a fund like Capital and Income because it's doing absolutely gangbusters, but it's 10-year And they hate the long-term government bonds. People are writing articles all the time about getting out of bonds, okay? And yet you don't see any difference on the problem. So you have to watch out for the fact that you could be going into a position where everybody loves the Fidelity Capital and Income, and it's going to get up toppy in March. And then the unloved U.S. long-term bonds, their time could be coming. And what we know from the past studies is what you really want to watch is what the yield is. And if the right now Capital and Income is yielding 6.4%, the long-term government bonds, the 30-year, which is not VUSTX, but you take the 30-year bond and you look at its interest rate, it's at 4.6%. Well, if you could ever get that, and if that getting up into May goes up to over 5%, like if you get to 5.5%. And the Capital and Income was getting to be around 6%, down from 6.3 or 6.4 to down to 6.0%. You begin to get to the question is, and the market begins to look dangerous. The answer is you're better off taking the 5.5% in the government bonds than you are in fooling around with something which everybody owns, and you're back into the case where you've got too many people pushing the popular item, and the one that's got left behind has gotten to be has a higher value. Now, the other thing that's really remarkable, I thought, was that what I had Parker doing is we're calculating a strategy a strategy, a well-defined strategy for switching between Vanguard U.S. long-term bonds and capital income. Okay, but the first step is to find out what's the best you can do to find out if it's good enough. Otherwise, you go on to some other project. And so, what we've done in the green bottom column is we have retrospectively decided that we'll take the best bond of the year, and we didn't say how we did it. We just say but that's the best you can do. So, for example, in the year 2000, you had you see the stock market is coming down, but the Vanguard long-term bond is up 19%. Capital income is down. Capital income is known to go with the S&P 500. See, so the best bond for the year 2000 is 19.7%. If you run that all the way through, you know, you get the big 72% in 2009 for the coming out of the hole. And on the other hand, capital income down was down 32% in 2008, you know, which is part of the problem. Okay, but when you come along and you take the best case is the hypothetical retrospective view, you get a 20.2% different compound growth rate. Actually, if you can't find out how to do 20%, you don't belong in the business, because that's what you're going to really do. That's where you grow money over long periods of time to make real progress. The 0.4% is terrible. Okay, but what's remarkable is these two funds are only doing about 7.6 or 7%. And yet, when you put them together and you flip between them, you can go jump all the way up to 20%. You'd think that you probably only get like 12% out of that, and that's because these bonds are both are high quality bonds for their respective categories, but they're complementary, and they're complementary like in the seesaw. If you go to a playground and you see kids going up and down on a seesaw, when one kid goes up high, the other one is dropped down low, and then it shifts around, and what's going high down goes down, and what was low goes back up. And it turns out that these are like a seesaw fund, that if you get hit hard in the stock market, really hard on the S&P, you're going to get hit really high on the high yield bonds funds, but it's the chance for the treasuries, which are the defensive play, they come up fast. Okay, if you look at the bottom, when you look at the 09 bottom, you have the yields on the government bonds are very low, and then suddenly they get rid of them and they don't want them. But as soon as they go down, capital and income has this tremendous rally because it's had compressed value. So the beauty of this is that this, you only got two entities to watch. And you know, if one is really bad, the other one is really good. So you don't have to ever go out to the idea of the gold if you don't want to, or you don't have to go out to emerging markets if you don't want to, because you know it's one of the two, and they are on the seesaw. So if one is bad, you have to believe that the other one was good, okay? Because they're complementary in this argument. So it occurred to me that nobody was ever going to buy one of these funds anyway and hold them for 1 year. You know, you December 31st, you make your choice, you put your funds into one of these two, and then you got to hold it for a year, because there's a lot of the things that happen in a year. And nobody's going to be that confident anyway. So I had Parker run this off in the quarters, that is the calendar quarters, 3 months. And that would be in other words, January, February, March would be one potential holding period. Then you have to do April, May, and June is the second hand period. So you would have an opportunity. In this one, you have 11 decisions to make. When you do it quarterly, you're going to have 44 decisions you're going to have to make. And so I said, okay, now calculate what's the retrospective, what's the best you could do if you get all the quarters right. And the quarters turn out to be, if you do that, it's 26% compound growth rate up from 19%. Up from 20. Up from 20% if you do it in yearly holding periods to 26% if you go in the quarterlies. Okay, but that's all a retrospective view. The interesting thing about the 3 month, you have the problem of every 3 months you've got to make a change. You've got to have to come up with something. And what's the interesting thing about the 3 months? Well, when you convert 3 months to weeks, you find out it's the spacing between the ringing cycles. And so what you really need to do the 3-month thing is figure out what the ringing cycles are doing. Or you could do money flow T's in the bonds. We'd have two money flows, one for the best bonds, which incidentally does show a mid-February top, and the other one is for the government bonds. And as far as we can tell, the government bonds, they're sort of dead in the water, or at least now there's nothing pointed out to them. If you look at the statistics, you get another perspective on this, that for the month of January, gold was down about, the S&P benchmark was up 2.37% for the month of January. Gold was down 6.38%. Capital and income was up 2.99%. VUSTX was down 2.38%. So when you look at it, you can see the general category is that capital and income is up basically 3% versus 2.4% for the S&P. So it beat the S&P 500. Maybe it didn't beat, you could always find something else that was better, but it wasn't gold, okay? And then there's the question, is emerging markets getting into trouble? Because then you start getting into trouble on other things, okay? So that suggests that what you should really do is do a monthly, which is the next thing we're working on, is every at the beginning of every month you have made a choice as to which one you want to be in. And that for that period, you're going to have 144. I guess it's 144 decision points. And then you ask the question, what is the maximum you can get out of that? And that is so you've gone from 20 to 26, and then I would think you go up to 30 or something like that. Well, if you look at gold historically, you're talking about 20 to 25% depending on what kind of gold you're talking about. But it's amazing to me that you can actually get this thing out, but it's all because of the seesaw effect, that if one is very good, the other one has to be very bad. And so it turns out that when something is very good and something is very bad, it's very easy to figure out which one you should be in. There isn't a problem. Sometimes the two get together, and if you have very high government bonds yields, you can actually have a strategy where you straddle the two by putting half the money in each one. That's another thing that we're testing. But it's the seesaw approach. Now, if you want to see the seesaw approach, if you go to a RightX fund or some other or pro funds or something like that, what they're doing is they're producing the seesaw effect by saying, yeah, you can buy gold or you can buy an inverse fund on gold. Okay, and that way, one of them is always going up and one of them is always going down. You just have to figure out which one it is. However, in those cases, you'll find out that the inverse fund is usually terrible. It has very poor performance long term. And a remarkable thing about this one is, even if you guess wrong, as long as you don't guess wrong in a bad situation, it doesn't really make any difference because the two funds have comparable long-term rates of return. And if you're ambiguous, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being split between the two. And if you split between the two, you can't be 100% wrong. You can only be 50% wrong, and it probably won't make any difference anyway. So it's very, very sane, and it goes back to the remarkability of how I can end up with two funds that have the same total return over 11 years but act so much differently. Okay, so that's all I wanted to point out. I think I covered everything that I want to today. Parker's analysis may turn out to be on some points to be proprietary to my American Shareholders Company, but I do think that we have quite a few things here to get into that are going to be like new departures for T-theory to go off into the on a better track. I will be presenting some tutorials as soon as I get this other program up and running. So I'll be adding them down at the bottom of the page here, so you can keep track on that one. But I think that they're something you could think about too, and spend some time roaming around in the stock charts to get an idea of that. Okay, so that's it for this Sunday. Thanks for checking in, and we'll be back next Sunday at our regular time. Bye-bye.